Hi, everybody. Good morning. It's my pleasure to be here today to talk a little bit more about the rhizosphere acidification of blueberries. Now, I'm going to start talking a bit more about the context in which this research happens, in that I know that our question about rhizosphere acidification can be pretty abstract if you don't keep that in mind. Soil pH is a major factor that affects plant performance. We know this across all the agricultural crops. With blueberries and plants in the Ericaceae family, this is particularly accentuated because these plants thrive in acidic soils. These acidic soils are very different than the average agricultural soil. They have pHs usually lower than 5.5. They have ammonium as the most abundant form of nitrogen. They have readily available micronutrients. Of course, as I said, this is a contrast with the average soil. So growers have to resort to soilless cultivation, like the one we see here in the picture, or to heavy use of organic materials and other soil amendments in order to create these soil conditions. This is one of the factors that is driving the cost of producing blueberries up. And we figure there is, and this is also an opportunity for researchers to be able to develop something that growers might be able to use to break this dependency with soilless substrates, and with soil amendments. It is important to keep in mind also that organic growers, being an important fraction of the folks growing blueberries across the United States and across the world, have fewer tools that they can use in order to manage their soil pH. So they are particularly at the mercy of all the processes that are changing the rhizosphere pH in these plants. In this context, our group and other groups have posited the idea that for acid-loving plants, if they are able to acidify their rhizosphere, this might be a trait for pH adaptability. Essentially, the thought process here suggests that if the plant is able to create an acidic microenvironment around those roots, those plants might be able to better withstand higher pH soils, and as such, they might be easier to cultivate without the heavy soil amendments. We know that there are some plants that are capable of acidifying the rhizosphere. This has been shown in woody plants as well as in herbaceous crops, so we know that the biology of this is actually there. And in general, it manifests itself in the form of a net increase of hydrogen ions in the rhizosphere. Now, it's important to keep in mind that this is a net increase because there's many processes that are going to work synergistically and antagonistically with the rhizosphere acidification response. To provide a bit of context, plants are going to use this rhizosphere acidification response for many reasons, some of which include to solubilize divalent metals and, of course, to solubilize phosphorus from the soil. Now, I'm going to use this diagram of a root epidermal cell to show a little bit more of what we're actually studying. Here we have an H plus ATPase. This is a plasma membrane-bound protein that is going to use the energy of ATP to pump hydrogen ions across the plasma membrane. What is happening here is that the plant is directly expending energy in order to acidify its rhizosphere. We have termed this response the direct acidification. We know it happens in all the cells of the plant, particularly when we are in the root epidermal cell. We know that this leads on to an acidification of the rhizosphere. This is only one of the processes that's going to affect that rhizosphere pH because there are more. Particularly, nutrient uptake is very relevant. And nutrient uptake as a whole is going to have many different elements that the plant is going to take up. But today I'm going to focus on nitrogen. I'm focusing on nitrogen because this is the element that plants take up in the largest amounts, and also because nitrogen is unique in that the plant can take it up both as an anion and as a cation. So when nitrogen is taken up as an anion in the form of nitrate, the plants use a symport mechanism. The symport mechanism removes hydrogen ions from the apoplast or from the rhizosphere, which leads to pH going up. Essentially creates hostile conditions for the plant, if you would like to think about it that way. The converse to this is going to be cation uptake, and cation uptake in this case is going to be ammonium. When ammonium crosses the plasma membrane, since it is positively charged, it elicits a response in the plant through which H plus ATPase activity is enhanced. The plant is going to try to stay electrically neutral, and to do that, ammonium goes in and more hydrogen ions go out. Thus, we surmise that nitrogen form is critical. In a preliminary experiment carried out by my student, we figured out that this was actually happening in blueberries. We see this across the board in physiology textbooks, but we actually want to test this with blueberries. And we see here how, depending on what nitrogen source the plants were exposed to, we have very different rhizosphere pH. If the plants were exposed to 5 millimolar nitrate, we see the pH went up. If the plants were exposed to 5 millimolar ammonium, we see that the pH went down. This, again, is still kind of a textbook response to the nitrogen form that the plants are exposed to. Now, the really interesting thing happens when we take a look at this acidification. The acidification we see here when the plants are exposed to ammonium is one that could actually be masking two different responses. We know that those roots are taking up ammonium, and we know that those roots also have a basal level of H plus ATPase activity. What we set out to determine was which of these two processes has a larger contribution to the overall rhizosphere acidification. Said otherwise, we wanted to essentially compare how plants would be able to acidify the rhizosphere in the presence or absence of ammonium as a nitrogen form. Our hypothesis overall was that ammonium uptake plays a greater role than the basal H plus ATPase activity in the rhizosphere pH of southern high bush blueberry. We tested this hypothesis using one-year-old emerald southern high bush blueberry. This is a popularly planted southern high bush. We cleaned the roots of these plants, we removed all the substrate that they had been rooted in, and then we transplanted them into a simple hydroponic system. The system that you see here is the system that we use for acclimation, in which every plant was transplanted into this 2-liter reservoir that is filled with a complete nutrient solution that has been buffered to pH 5.5. We do this acclimation period. This also happened with continuous aeration, with fresh nutrient solution every 7 days. We use this acclimation period in order to make sure that the plants are not going to experience the shock of going from a substrate-based system into a solution-based system, and that they are ready to essentially be tested on as healthy plants. After 3 weeks of acclimation, we went on to a split root system. To put together this split root system, there was a little bit of background work that was carried out. We have a poster showing all the work that went into doing this. Essentially, what the idea behind the split root is to be able to expose one half of the root system to a nutrient solution and the other half to a different one. This, of course, is going to be critical for us to be able to separate this ammonium effect. We had the plant in the split root system for 5 weeks following a completely randomized design in which there were 7 replications per treatment. The treatments were combinations of ammonium and ammonium non-nitrogen. So here you will see every plant of the plants in the experiment had 2 different nutrient solution reservoirs. Reservoir A is the reservoir where the plant is getting the optimum nitrogen nutrition. Essentially, this nutrient solution is buffered to pH 5.5. It also contains 5 millimolar ammonium. We used that reservoir to make sure that the plants had optimum nitrogen nutrition and that we were not measuring the responses of a nitrogen-deficient plant. Then, in reservoir B is where we started varying the presence or absence of ammonium. In reservoir B, for one of the treatments, we have 5 millimolar ammonium. For the other treatment, we have no nitrogen. Essentially, all other nutrient concentrations stay the same. We're only varying the nitrogen concentration. And of course, since we are interested in the pH evolution in this particular system, reservoir B was not buffered to allow us to see that pH change. The split root system pictured here, this was the first time that we had used it, so the first question we had to answer right off the gate was, is this system stressing the plants in any way? We did not find differences. We did not find significant differences in terms of growth between plants that went into the split root system and plants that stayed in the single reservoir system for the duration of the experiment. We also measured the relative electrolyte leakage in those roots, and when we compared roots in reservoir A in both treatments, we found no significant differences. When we compared roots in reservoir B between systems, we found no significant differences. It's important to point out that the comparison reservoir A to reservoir B is not a fair comparison here because the electrical conductivity of solutions in reservoir A and solutions in reservoir B was different to start off. So to the best of our estimation, we know that the split root system did not stress the root system as a whole. Then we moved on to take a look at nitrogen uptake. It was interesting to find out that when no nitrogen was supplied in one hydroponic reservoir, the other reservoir responded by increasing nitrogen uptake. What we can see here on your left-hand side, we have that the roots that were in the non-buffered ammonium-containing nutrient solution actually took up more nitrogen than the roots that were in the buffered nutrient solution. Now, interestingly enough, when one half of the root systems did not have the ability to take up nitrogen because nitrogen was absent from that solution, we saw that the other half of the root system essentially tried to make up the difference. We then went to look at those leaves to figure out whether these plants actually had sufficient nitrogen. We know that the trend that's observed in nitrogen uptake over time would eventually probably lead to a nutrient deficiency, but for the 5-week period in which we run this experiment, we found that there were no significant differences between treatments when we compare the percentage nitrogen content in the leaves, and also when we compare the chlorophyll content measured via the Konica-Minolta SPAD meter. We can see here that these leaves actually had enough nitrogen, so we don't expect the plant to be responding to a nitrogen deficiency just yet. And when we looked at the root nitrogen content, then we did find, as expected, that the nutrient solution nitrogen content directly impacted the nitrogen content inside those leaves, inside those roots, I'm sorry. If roots were being cultivated in a nutrient solution without nitrogen, they had significantly lower nitrogen content than roots that were cultivated in a nutrient solution with nitrogen. So with that bit of background, our estimation was that these plants are not experiencing a nitrogen deficiency yet, and that they're not being stressed by the system. So we actually proceeded to go ahead and look at the rhizosphere pH change in these plants. Over a period of 5 weeks, we found that there was a significant rhizosphere acidification with or without ammonium uptake. What we can see here is a set of 5 weeks. You can see that there's an overall trend that is repeated there. With a few exceptions during the first week, we see that there was actually rhizosphere acidification with or without the presence of ammonium. At this point, what we have done is we just tested this via t-test comparing to the pH of the nutrient solution of a bottle that had no plants in them, and we see that there's an effective change that the plants are bringing about. Now, with the intention of comparing these two treatments, what we did is we used data only from day 3 or day 4 of each week, figuring that this would be the midpoint in the week, and we went ahead and analyzed this data through a mixed method model. The model that we fit to the data is one in which we tried to analyze the variance in the reservoir B pH by fitting the model that accounts for treatment, which is, of course, the nitrogen source, duration, which has to do with the fact that the plant is taking up nitrogen and growing over this five-week time period, and the interaction of those two. The error source here has to do with the repeated measurements happening on the same individual over time and happening week by week in the same system. When we fit the system, we found that treatment duration and the interaction of these two phenomena were important. We found that treatment affected rhizosphere pH in a magnitude of 1.19 pH units, and this is a rather large magnitude if you keep in mind that pH is measured on a logarithmic scale. What this is telling us is that overall in this data set, what we observe is that when roots were exposed to ammonium, they had 1.19 pH units lower rhizosphere pH than when they were not. This is our best ability to characterize which of those two processes is driving the rhizosphere pH change. Interestingly enough, we also saw that duration was significantly different, and that duration suggests that week after week we're seeing lower pHs. As you can see here in the box plot, you can see that over time, even the plants that are not being exposed to ammonium are going to show significant rhizosphere acidification. If you compare, for instance, the blue box on the right to the orange box on the left, you will see that you actually get to have similar rhizosphere acidification, even in absence of the presence of ammonium. And finally, we saw an interaction between treatment and duration, which we take to mean the different slopes that we see in the rhizosphere pH change between two treatments, where the plants that were not exposed to ammonium are going to show a much sharper decline in the rhizosphere pH than the plants that are taking up ammonium. So after this small dive into mixed model statistics, we came back with our conclusion, and in our conclusion we found out that ammonium uptake plays a greater role than basal H+ ATPase activity in the rhizosphere acidification of the southern highbush blueberry. But this was, as with most research, this was only an eye-opener because it showed us a couple of different opportunities. Now that we know that blueberries are actually able to acidify the rhizosphere, some of the questions we have is whether this might be a variable trait among blueberries. So our next steps include, of course, testing more genotypes of southern highbush blueberry, as well as testing several wild blueberry species, to see if these plants might indeed be able to create this acidic microenvironment around their roots. Additionally, we have, of course, various recommendations for the ammonium to nitrate rates that have been developed for blueberries. However, I think it would be interesting to revisit those recommendations and see whether we're actually delivering a pH-neutral nitrogen fertility program, or whether that classic recommendation of three parts ammonium to one part nitrate might in fact be further increasing the rhizosphere pH and increasing, of course, the effort and inputs that are necessary to maintain pH at an adequate level, whether it is in soil or substrate-based blueberry production. So with that, I want to wrap up by acknowledging all the folks that have been essential to the conduct of this research. I want to point out that every single data point for this research is actually carried out by undergraduate students in my classroom undergraduate research experience course at the University of Florida. We were funded through an ARS cooperative agreement with the Tad Cochran Southern Horticultural Laboratory from the USDA, and we have collaborated with Rebecca Darnell and Moshe Doron in making sure that the data set is ready to be presented today. With that, I will gladly take any questions you might have. Yes. We use MES for the buffer. So that has been traditionally the buffer that folks use because it has pretty good buffering capacity in the ranges that are relevant.